The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case 23 in the Gateless Gate. Wei Nung, neither good nor evil. The sixth ancestor was pursued by Ming, the head monk, as far as Taiyu Peak. The teacher, seeing Ming coming, laid the robe and bowl on a rock and said, "This robe represents the Dharma. There should be no fighting over it. You may take it back with you." Ming tried to lift it up, but it was as immovable as a mountain. Shivering and trembling, he said, "I came for the Dharma, not for the robe. I beg you, lay brother, please open the way for me." The teacher said, "Don't think good, don't think evil. At this very moment, what is the original face of Ming, the head monk?" In that instant, Ming had great satori. Sweat ran from his entire body. In tears, he made his bows, saying, "Beside these secret words and secret meanings, is there anything of further significance?" The teacher said, "What I have just conveyed to you is not secret. If you reflect on your own face, whatever is secret will be right there with you." Ming said, "Though I practiced at Huangmei with the assembly, I could not truly realize my original face. Now, thanks to your pointed instruction, I am like someone who drinks water and knows personally whether it is cold or warm. Lay brother, you are now my teacher." The teacher said, "If you can say that, then let us both call Huangmei our teacher. Maintain your realization carefully." As I was thinking about this talk, this little voice kept playing in my head, this announcer who said, "Welcome to episode 2 of the action thriller, Escape with the Robe and Bowl." Because it is quite a story. It's got a poor protagonist from a humble background, illiterate. It's got competition. It's got winners and losers. It's got a chase. It's got the threat of violence. And it's got a denouement where the good guy wins. And I can imagine multiple seasons where you do each of his generation of heirs. So, our ancestors were writing a good story, and I bet they knew it. But this isn't just a good story. They were trying to convey to us something so powerful. In the dramas, so we have an old teacher who intimidates a young man, and the young man stands his ground. We have a competition where poems are written, and one wins and the other doesn't. We have chasing a wooden bowl and a piece of cloth. Our ancestors were telling us about how the mind gets caught, how we get trapped in mistaking what's bright and shiny for what's really important. Northern or southern ancestor absolutely unimportant. Barbarian, no barbarian. Illiterate, literate. Not important. What's important is, as Mike told us yesterday, seeing clearly. And that capacity to see clearly is there for all of us. And that, of course, is what we value so much in Hui Nung. Melissa said that the ants and sticks and grizzly bears are already enlightened. And I think she was pointing to the fact that, as far as we know, they don't make up stories about symbolic robes and bowls and competitions in poetry writing. Just this. Food, no food. Place to hibernate. But we humans have these minds that make up amazing stories, but minds that get caught so easily. I became aware of this vividly as I started using a meditation timer on my phone. It's an app that has a beautiful bell, so I love using it to open and close my Zazen period each day. But they give you stars. If you have 10 periods in a row, you get a gold star, and then you can get red stars for more, you know, when you get higher up, and green stars finally. And I found myself not just using that app for what I needed, for the bell, for the beginning and ending. No, I found myself saying, well, I better sit today because I'm going to mess up my sequence and I'm not going to get my gold star. And of course, I could sit back and say, what is this mind? Grabbing onto gold stars. But how much have we done this? How much do you find yourself attaching to a title? A promotion, a being included or left out, in ways that don't matter at all. So poor Monk Ming, military general, chasing for 2 months, and suddenly he stands there facing Hui Nung, looks at this piece of wood and this piece of cloth, and says, I didn't come for this. How often have we chased and chased and chased and then seen a symbol that by itself is empty and said, oh, is this it? I didn't come for this. The clear seeing that Hui Nung shows us is like that drink of water. It's like, ah, yes. I know this. I know this to be true. My heart tells me. And that's what happens in this koan. Our hearts resonate with the truth that Hui Nung presents about oneness, about no separation. Yesterday, the question arose in our dialogue. Well, but what about all this angst and all this anger and all this heartache that we sit with? Is this part of the path to awakening? Such an important question. And if you think about the awakened nature that we see evident in this story, we see it at moments of heightened emotion. Wei Nung stands there, having traveled 1,000 miles to learn from a venerated teacher, and the teacher humiliates him. Even if the teacher is testing him, what must that be like for a young man who has given up everything to be standing in this place in front of this revered man? And then he stands facing Ming, who is a general, scary man. And he says his truth, so evident that sweat pours from all over Ming's body, and he makes his bows and says, "You are my teacher." So maybe we admire Wei Nung for being able to see clearly in spite of all this intense emotion, of feeling humiliated, of feeling scared. But maybe Wei Nung sees clearly because he's in the midst of this intense emotion. I think about my own hell realms at Sesshin, outside of Sesshin. Times when I am consumed with shame or anger. And it has been in many of those moments that suddenly I will see a flower in a way I have never seen it before. Suddenly the wood grain on the floor will leap out at me. That it's in those times of pain that the Dharma gate can open wide. And so we keep saying, be with it, be with everything, because everything is a Dharma gate. And each of us has the capacity for that clear seeing that Wei Nung shows us. It's there in each of us, that Dharma eye, just waiting to be opened and awakened. Wei Nung's clear seeing reverberates across centuries to remind us that each of us is here to look and look and look again with the faith that our hearts will tell us what's true.
So if everything is a Dharma gate, Then even if you are in a place of ease and spaciousness, this is okay. A student many years ago came to me and said he was worried because he was feeling more at ease in his life and more present. And he wondered if he was doing something wrong. And I assured him that no, this is how human beings feel sometimes. And I so appreciate, as we talk here in these Dharma talks and Dharma dialogues, the taking full on this human suffering, because it does appear so clearly that this should be different. Most of us have such a strong opinion, and Jeannie last night so wonderfully talking about the complaining mind. And of course, all of us have this mind. All of us know this mind. And that this mind is not the problem. The only problem is when we think this mind is the problem, and then we fight. If you fight the complaining mind has already won. Gosh darn it, I have the complaining mind. I don't like that. So when complaining mind comes, we create space. We allow things to be. This wonderful story of Wei Nung emphasizes the chase. But in the end, we can begin to see that there's nothing to chase. Recently, Melissa and I were leading a retreat, and there were people from many different countries there. And it was in Portugal, and one young man was from France, and the second or third day he raised his hand in the Dharma dialogue, and he said, "I'm beginning to see that there's nothing here to get that I didn't have in France." And we said, "Yes, there is nothing here that you didn't have before you came." And yet we come together. And yet we are required to make this great effort. We call being a true practitioner sometimes being a home leaver. That part of this venerable tradition has been human beings leaving their daily life. Originally in the Buddha Sangha, it was renouncing your ordinary life. The Buddha, when he set off, left his wife and child. And as we think about this from our perspective, what was he doing? And in fact, this story of Wei Nung is in some ways the Chinese attempt to weave in a kind of a social conscience to this story of, well, just leave everything. In that Wei Nung, although he left his mother, this story is very careful to point out that he provided for his mother. He made sure that she was okay. And I think it was Melissa said that Zen is indeed a new form of Buddhism. Zen is a different approach than the traditional Indian Buddhism, with its emphasis on home leaving and leaving the world. In China, of course, there were ordinations of monks and nuns, and this was an option to do. But still, this the wisdom of relationship. And in China, the Confucian stream and the Tao stream, Taoism, coming together and mixing with these teachings of the Buddha. Even more so here in America, as we practice here, none of us are renunciates in this room. Some of us are ordained, but not ordained in the sense of separating from our families. We practice a practice of full involvement. So we come, we leave our daily life, and we might say all of us here are monks and nuns for 2 days, 3 days, 7 days, however long you'll be here. All of us take up this way of stepping outside of our life. And indeed, even if you get a lot of gold stars or even a green star on your app, even if you are totally faithful in your Zazen in daily life, there is something that can happen here that simply isn't possible. And I think, of course, a daily practice wonderful to weave in this formal practice with the practice of being a mother, being a father, being a co-worker, a friend, whatever our life is in the moment. But to be able to leave, be able to devote ourselves in this way, to be taken care of. Our meals magically appear. We just have to stand in line and go to the kitchen. When there's not a retreat going on at the temple, sometimes I walk into the kitchen hoping there will be food for me. And there is food when I open the refrigerator, but none on the table. But for this time, for this week, you walk into the kitchen. Food is on the table. We all come back and do our chants and eat together. This home leaving, so important to be here, to find our way to what has always been here. And this Dharma gate of the difficulty, so important, whatever is here. This is your true teacher. Your true teacher is not Bob or Melissa or Mike or David, but your true teacher is your life. And moment after moment, the floor comes to meet your foot. Moment after moment, the air comes in and goes out. And the wisdom that these stories, these koans and these stories of our tradition hand on is not a wisdom that exists outside of you. When I heard my first Dharma talks, and actually one of the first ones I remember was on this particular koan, I was amazed at how excited the teacher could get about a story. Because I read the story, I said, well, that's kind of nice. But the teacher would blab on and on in all this excited way about what this meant and how important it was. And I had an inkling that the wisdom he was talking about was not just in the story, but at first I thought in him. But now over the years more and more I see that the wisdom of these stories is your wisdom. The story is the entry point to your own heart. As we have said, you are Wei Nung. You are Wei Nung's teacher. You are the senior monk. You are a monk Ming. You are the robe and the bowl. And maybe especially you are the sweat that is pouring down, all of us joining in this great tradition. We had a little extra gift this morning of the heat being turned on, just to intensify our practice just a slight bit. We decided to turn it down again because apparently it's hot enough in here. But all of us meet this, and where I'm heading, and I really do hope to get, it is appreciating the times when it's not a struggle. And that that it is natural to be anxious, to be afraid, to be angry, to be sad, to be lonely, to be dull, to be spaced out. It is also equally natural to be fully present, to be so engaged in the walking that you can't tell who is the one who is walking. There is only this moment. And all of us, too, know these moments. And sometimes these moments come only after we exhaust our suffering. We suffer and we suffer. We hear all the complaints inside our head about ourselves and about life. But then at some point, and this is not something we can orchestrate or do or control, but there are these moments when, like Monk Ming, we realize I am not looking for something else. What I really want is to be present. What I really want is to be alive, to be part of this great universe. And so these moments of spaciousness or ease, as they come up, don't worry. Although they are quite unfamiliar to most of us. Mm-hmm. Most of us are so used to working hard. If we don't continually work hard, we think something must be wrong. And so in some way, this practice that all of us giving ourselves to so fully, each one of us, is the practice of trying less and less hard. This possibility that what we're looking for is not the robe and the bowl, not the title, not the confirmation from the teacher. But what we are looking for is this precious life, this breath, this moment, this sweat rolling down the body is a gift. And we, like the birds and like the plants, like the wind and like the rocks, we are a part of it all. The whole universe does not exist someplace else. There is nowhere else to go wandering, because every place you go, you will be there. And every place you are, everything that has ever been and will ever be, is right here at this moment, this vast moment. We say this is day two of retreat, but that's only quite provisional. None of us know. You may think I'll be here for three more days, or you may think I'm getting out this afternoon. But all we know, the only thing we can truly depend on, is the entrustment of this moment. The fullness of this moment, drinking water, eating food, sitting still, aching shoulders, easeful, open heart, closed heart. Our great bodhisattva vow is to be present, to give up our great plan, and to settle into the loving arms of the universe, right here. Thank you. So please sit comfortably. And we'll have our Dharma dialogue. So comments, questions, insights. So, Kevin?
Bob was talking about grasping. It made me think. My son, who's about 5.5 months old and is starting to grasp for things, and or starting to actually get a hold of them, and when he does, of course, my wife and I are so excited and praise him and think, and for a moment was sort of worried, like, oh, we're starting the seeds of his suffering. we're praising him for grasping at things, and is that a problem? But I realize that the ants and the sticks and the grizzly bears may be enlightened, but I don't want to be a stick. I don't want to be an ant. I don't want him to be either. And so I was just thinking that this grasping we talking about as a problem, but it's also really important.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We are human beings, and one of the teachings in all forms of Buddhism is that only as a human being can you wake up to the Dharma. So those ants and sticks and grizzly bears, because they haven't had the experience of developing consciousness, don't know, there's no opportunity to realize. Already awake is what everybody starts with. But realizing our awakened heart is only what human beings can do, and only because we can grasp for things. And then later, this is nothing, the grasping, he'll start making plans. Right? It'll be amazing. And you'll see it. That's a wonderful thing, that those of us who have kids see the development of that. And it's extraordinary how clever we are. So on the Wheel of Life and Death, that's depicted where some of you have seen that, the six realms of existence. One of the realms is the human realm, and the human realm is the realm of beings who make plans, who organize things, who make lists, who say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to get that, who have that wonderful, those of you who heard Jeannie's talk last night, this whole idea that at the end of Sesshin, I'm going to get a present. Only a human being could do that.
Right. Right?
Even though we don't know what's in the box, doesn't matter. We have the future in our minds, as well as the past, too. This remembrance, which is the literal translation of the word for mindfulness. So we got the whole thing. And what we learn, I think, in Zen is not to narrow our wanting. Because we have a lot of experience with that already. We have to know how to exercise our wanting nature, and then in Zazen we learn to expand it. So right now, all he wants, this little kid, is the ball in front of him. And he'll do everything, his whole being, to get over to it. Later, that'll expand. He'll want awakening too, but only because he could grasp the ball.
I like that. That's a nice way of putting it. I was also thinking about how in the Dharma we divide into emptiness and form, the absolute, the relative, enlightened, unenlightened, awake, not awake. And this is inevitable because the moment we use a word, we're excluding something. But there's also this instantaneous collapsing of the house of cards of the Dharma. You know, you read the Heart Sutra and it immediately tells you emptiness is exactly form. They are not separate. And there is something about realization. There is something about awakening to that aspect of life. And it's already here. So these things in our linear way of thinking, which is always either or, seem to be in opposition all the time, and we're trying to reconcile. How do I reconcile these two things that are different? Well, they're not actually different. But that can be, but I've already bought into this half and this half. Why do you use two words for it then? You know, on and on we go. Because that's the nature of our mind. So we're getting to see that.
Heather.
Thank you for the talk. I too have that app, and I have earned many green stars. And then...
Can we compare?
And then I missed a day. And you would think that I burned this temple to the ground. And the inner critic arose very fiercely, and you had hundreds and hundreds of days, and what a waste! And it occurs to me that that's the same voice that I experienced not too long ago when I forgot about the bows before the Taisha.
Yeah.
And just prior to that, in the sutra service, for a moment, I wanted to just thank all of you because it sounded beautiful to me this morning, and I was deeply moved and just in the moment and really enjoying all of that. And then to have that sort of go away when I made a mistake and really have that voice very strongly, yelling at me, it took a moment. But I finally came to the realization that that voice and being so critical about making a mistake was no different than experiencing the beauty of the sutra service. Yes. And in both of those moments, I was just aware of what was going on. And once I sort of made that kind of connection, then the mistake, well, it was still a mistake, but it wasn't like burning the temple down or losing my green star. It was just what was happening right then. So, and then we had this lovely Tay Show. So thank you.
I had to turn off the stars. You can turn off the stars.
Someone taught me.
Don't accumulate stars. That's so zen. But the words that jumped out at me was at the end of your reading the koan, this imperative, maintain your realization. And it's like, what does that mean? What kind of action is that?
Yeah, so what do you think?
Yeah, we are asking.
For you, what would it be?
It sounds like sustain. It sounds like grasping, hold on to the moment when the floor shines.
Yeah.
But I mean, it can't maintain. Maybe it means practice.
So many places to get caught. One is getting caught in the critic and that, oh my God, I really am. But the other thing is to get caught in the grain of the floor. Say, you know, wow, I really have it. This is cool. And then we want to maintain it in that hold on to. But if awakening is not a moment or a particular state, what we want to maintain is being present with what's here. Then the great awakening is that incredible rising of shame or anger or frustration, whatever it is. And you know, all of this stuff so easily gets interpreted in the sort of, all right, I've got it, I'm going to maintain, I'm going to hold on to it. But for me, the other side that's so important is all of you have experienced something that's so precious. And it is your responsibility to keep heading toward what you love. It is our job, each one of us, not to protect it, because you can't protect it. There's nothing there. But to, as you say, to practice. In some way it's already here, and in some way never enough. There is this infinite journey that we're on, and each moment is it, and requires more. I say yesterday's awakening is today's delusion.
And you know that last line, apparently, I don't know Chinese, but what I read is that it's a formulaic response. It's a formulaic, we're done now, like ringing the Doksan bell. Mm-hmm. And the other translation, which in Tangling Vines, it ends with a different translation of that line, which is take good care of yourself. Right? So it has that feel. It literally means maintain your realization. But it's like, so you are an awakened being, don't forget it. That's what it kind of really means.
Yeah.
And this not forgetting, you know, I keep thinking about Kevin's talking about his baby. The act of grasping in Mahayana teachings, which could be greed, right? It naturally transforms into compassion and love, because it's reaching forward into the world to make connections with things. So it starts out as, I want. And it transforms into, oh, I'm one with everything. That takes at least 20 years of development of the brain. You know, he's not going to have that feeling probably for another 20 years, but who knows? Because he's your kid. that line has this expectation that awakening is always present, and you just experienced it, and you're going to forget it. Just because that's what human beings do. But the flower is growing from the seed, not your responsibility. Your responsibility is just to keep reminding yourself. And that's partly what I think Zazen is all about. It's a constant reminder, oh, right, this, what Adam was saying, you know, the two states of, oh, this is the best sutra service ever, and, oh, shit, I'm an idiot, are your attempt, right, to grasp a story about yourself. And in that sense, yeah, they're all good. But some don't, they feel different.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, Jenny, that you, Ming is excited, right? He says, now I've got it, right? And so there is this kind of tempering of, okay, you know, because I think we do get excited mm-hmm. at these moments of opening, and there's such a wish that, okay, now I have it, this is it, it's the wood grain, I'm done. And so, you know, I think that the last line is like, okay.
I think about that in terms of Doksan. You know, it takes so long to get in, right? You have the impulse. Oh, I had this great thing that happened to me. Let's say that happened to you. Sometimes it happens, and then you don't get in for days, and then you want to share it, but it's not in the present moment anymore. So it's become this very circumscribed story, and the teaching, I think, of many, many Doksans is, all right, what's here now? You know, and if you've maintained it in the sense that you were concerned about it, of encapsulating it, then you're going to just give the little encapsulation to the teacher. But if you've maintained it by continuing to be present to all the states that arise, then you get to be present to the state that's arising in the room. Hmm. And so that delay in getting to Doksan can be a real gift. Although when I was a student, I hated it.
Dinah?
I have heard this story before several times, and this time through, I just got stopped at don't think good, don't think evil. Hmm. And I just couldn't get past that. Hmm. And you know, I feel like I've wrestled in my life with what, you know, good and evil, and is there evil in the world? Is there good in the world? Or are they both just all, you know, kind of look together? And I just, can you talk more about that? Don't think good, don't think evil. Mm.
Well, I just want to talk about this place you're at. because you were brought up short somehow. And this is just one of the things to watch for as we hear the teachings. Because a lot of times we nod and go, oh yeah, oh yeah. And then you hear something and hear it in a new way. You've heard the don't think, but yeah, but either it touches something deep in us and we feel this movement, or it stops us in our tracks. And that being stopped in your tracks, it is the entry place. Mm-hmm. Right? And we want to be released. You know, well, what is it? Can you tell? But this is exactly where Monk Ming was. But I guess the clue I would give you, he said, don't think good, don't think evil. In this very moment, who are you? So we can get lost in, oh, no good, no evil, and I'll float around through the universe. But coming back, entering in here, being totally stopped, having no good plan for what I'm going to say or do, what's right here? Right? So this gift, the gift, the teaching, is this very place. And and the instruction is to do nothing.
That's hard too.
Yeah, thank you.
Lori?
Yeah, a lot of this discussion is reminding me of a teaching that I don't at all understand and can't even begin to, I'll begin to try to articulate. This is Dogen's Being Time, and I'll probably get it all mixed up, but there's a little snippet that the way I understand it is, this one moment contains everything, all of the past, all of the future. yet somehow we can function in this one moment independent of all of the past and all of the future. That's all I got.
So it's all inclusive and also independent? Is that where you get stuck?
Yeah, because there it's a seeming paradox.
Yeah.
But if you fully enter that moment, it totally makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and it's very close to what Mike was pointing out earlier about form and emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the mind, in any of these teachings, koans, dogen, any of our ancestral teachings, Heart Sutra, they're constantly saying this, that, not this, not that, both this and that, both not this. And the mind just goes, right? Like good and evil. And that little moment when David was talking to you, and there was just a moment, and you went, ah! Right? And we all laughed, because we've been there.
It was over.
Yeah, and then it was over. Yeah. Right. Goodbye. Don't go running after it. Yeah. So I think that we're kind of, you're right, this past, present, future thing.
Mm.
Those are words like form and emptiness. But there's just this.
Right.
And sometimes it's very tiny. And sometimes it's vast.
Hmm.
And Dogen also writes that there's no such thing as a moment. What is it? How long is it? Where is it? Where does it go? An independent moment? What's that? Right? Hmm. So he takes us down another path at times in his writing where he says that there's nothing. There's nothing to grasp. There's nothing to live into.
Yeah, one of these things that I love about these teachings, like, is that for me, every one of those perspectives is complete. So each angle is the whole universe expressed as this presentation. The moment of stopping, that's the whole universe. Then the mind goes on and generates a whole new schema. And that's the whole universe. And then that shifts, and you're at a new angle, and that's the whole universe.
A kaleidoscope. It just makes me think of a kaleidoscope.
Yeah. And you know, the mind wants to pin it down, but cannot be pinned down.
I have to go back to the baby stuff again, because you know, if that baby,
I wonder why.
I don't know. if that baby just focuses on the blue ball as the end, the beginning and end of everything, you know, it narrows everything down. But in reality, babies often notice the blue ball is it for a short time, and then the shift, and then the shift, and then the shift, and it's, you know, and it's again like the wonderful sutra service and the mistake. It's milk, blue ball, van, diaper, hungry, and he's not making up those words. Those words aren't present yet, probably, except in very limited form. But the shift. Now this, now this, now this. There's no clinging to the story at this point in development, right? There's only the gesture of reaching out, which again transforms into love. So thank goodness we all have that capacity to not get stuck.
On that note, let's come back to our zazen.